the pleasure of being able to talk with Monty Throder also.
Yeah,
that worked out well.
Well, you called him before you came and said you were going to be there.
Yes.
I don't think Monty's done anything. I don't think so.
He's retired from the company.
That's what I mean.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. He's.
I don't think. See, I carried on after I retired. I went I took on a lot of companies again. Consulting. I'm doing very little of it now. But I had a lot of companies.
Have we got the other tape in, Jeff?
Yes, we do.
We can go again. Well, before the tape started, you talked about how the Monsanto connection developed. But I wonder if you'd just go over that again, Dr. Hopwell, so that we've got it on the tape.
Well, as I say, we had contact with Monsanto through being customers of theirs with the chlorosulfonic acid, the phenyl chloride, or chlorobenzene for the carbon remover. And they had a man by the name of Watt, W-A-T-T. We used to, he was in the development end, I guess, and he maintained these contacts with us because we were customers, you see. And so then, as a result of that, Monsanto gave us some contacts. We worked on for the phosphorus group. And we worked on detergents. Well, really, the principal things going into the detergents. And they were working with polymers, styrene butadiene, acrylonitrile, general chemicals. And they gave us a contract, particularly to be acquainted with the general chemical field to help them in that. It was, but then when we were taken into the company, they bought us. Then we went into detergents, got them into ag chemicals. Synthetic fibers, of course. As we sold that to the board, because I was on the board too, and Charlie also, Monsanto, after, I think it was in 47 I went on the board. We developed the sodium tripolyphosphate as a builder for detergents, and also the detergent, put them in the general chemicals we used to watch, plasticizers and oil additives, and new methods for making nylon intermediates, which is, the point on that was, I wanted, this is a pet of mine, we used acrylonitrile for a raw material for our alkaline in Monsanto. I wanted to use it also to make nylon intermediates, and was successful in doing that through the hydrodimerization of acrylonitrile to make a dipic and then hexamethylene diamine. Mm-hmm. And Monsanto is using that today. These were new processes for the intermediates without going to the standard products, the butadiene and so on.
Let me take you back into the Lynn Watt and the development of the Monsanto connection.
Yeah.
Was he very much the key player in that period when Monsanto work was being funneled to the lab?
Yes, he was. He was a friend of ours, and of course a good employee at Monsanto. And he had the contact, and then
I think what intrigued them, and intrigued Edgar Queenie, was the fact that we were buying chemicals from them, and my God, the sales weren't very high. Chlorosulfonic acid, for instance. Who in the hell would use that except a crazy nuts like that? And methyl chloride, of course, that was a big volume. We made carbon remover for the Alamite Corporation. Our laboratory did, Thomas and Hoffman. We developed that, patented it, sold it to Alamite, and we made it and put it up in cans and so on. This is to remove carbon from automotive engines.
Yeah.
And became automatic. Chrysler started using it as an automatic when you stopped your motor at night to drive, to put it in the drive. You'd pull it on the last pull and it would suck the can's contents into the motor, you see. Let it stand overnight. Next morning, start up the motor and blow all the damn carbon out. Now this is before ethyl became prevalent, you see. I examined industry from that angle, and then seeing our record on that, why, then they started giving us a lot of that work. Like I said, we called phosphate, sodium triphosphate, as a builder and synthetic detergents. We did that while we were still consulting with them.
Yeah.
And we developed the baking powder from calcium phosphate for them. Other things. But that is our principal work. I mean, with Monsanto, and it developed a when we came into the company, then we opened up. And the reason Edgar really bought us out, he wanted to better the, I think, the character of Monsanto's scientific reputation, because at that time it wasn't on any really interesting new things. I mean, the standard products and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted to better that, and he thought maybe acquiring us would help.
When did you first meet him and Edgar Queenie?
I don't know, sometime during those intervening years. They bought us in 37. Well, it was between 30 and 37. That's about all I can, I can say.
Was the idea of the Monsanto purchase something that came quite suddenly, or had it been discussed for a number of years before it?
No, it came quite suddenly. He came in and put it that way. So, as I said before, you get so damn expensive, you're cheaper to buy it out. And he was a very pleasant, great guy. But that's the way he put it. And so then the negotiation started, which only lasted a month or so, and it concluded in Easter. And Easter Day in 1936.
He was, from what you just told us, he said obviously a large fraction of Monsanto's outside research budget was going to Thomas and Hochwald Laboratories. How much of your practice was Monsanto at that time?
In our laboratory, yeah. I would say about 30%.
And were part of the negotiations what you were going to have to do with other clients at that time?
We had to give them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went around and explained it to our various clients.
Yes, we had him all up. Monsanto was number one.
About how many clients did you have by that time?
We had about 11, mm-hmm. including Monsanto.
Didn't the prospect of going back inside the corporation cause you some qualms? You said earlier you'd wanted to be...
Back inside?
Well, you'd wanted to be independent. And Thomas Hopwell had been a very independent.
Well, we were pretty independent. With Monsanto, I mean, I was in Dayton. Well, both of us were originally. Charlie didn't move over to St. Louis in 45, and I moved here in 49. But we were pretty independent, by God, and we wanted to do something. Of course, we had to get the approval of the board and the executive committee. But that wasn't a problem. By that time, by 1947, we were both on the executive committee and on the board. Charlie was in 45, as a matter of fact. I went on in 47, I think it is. That's in my bibliography, I think.
Yeah.
And, if we wanted something done, then we went to Edgar. Edgar was a very broad-minded and ambitious for the company. And as I see, I think he wanted to better the stature, the scientific stature of the company. So he would listen to us. He would listen to these things. I mean, selling in Monsanto to go into synthetic fibers. Well, I presented the problem to them, and presented the statistics and all that, and him just like that. God, yes, go ahead. And things like that. I mean, but it was to take place in any atmosphere you see anything was going on. I mean, Edgar and I used to go fishing a lot up in Newfoundland. He transacted a lot of business up there and a lot of new things to do.
When was that? That was in the late 30s and...
That was in those days. No, that was in the 40s.
Yes.
40 and then in the 50s. But Edgar and I traveled around Europe too. We meet all the chemical people in Europe, the German outfits and so on. See, I was looking for new things. I mean, trying to broaden Monsanto in all respects. And so I was sort of the contact man with a lot of companies, you see. And I had friends all over Germany and France and Italy. And that's when we bought the Italian company, C. Edison. Which then became Monsanto Edison, which is the largest chemical company in Italy today. But Edgar was a very misunderstood person. They thought he was hard-boiled and insensitive to people. He was quite the opposite. He was very sensitive to people and things.
So there wasn't any dramatic shift in your
loss of independence, if that's where you want to put it there. Except we did have to get the approval, yes, I mean, of the board.
Yeah.
But that was so simple.
How long did it take in the late 30s to get from Dayton to St. Louis?
To St. Louis? By train, it took about 8 hours.
So it was a sort of two, if you went, did you go to St. Louis very much in that initial period, or?
Not too much. They would be more here in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Although I used to get over there. Like,
that was in And a man by the name of Gaston Dubois, who was with Monsanto, and he was really in the position which I took later in charge of all the technology and all of that. He used to keep in fairly close contact with us. We had meetings with him regularly. We would get up to date on what we were doing.
Could you tell us a little bit about what Monsanto was like when you and Charlie Thomas first began to work exclusively on new technology for Monsanto?
This is after the merger?
Yeah, about late 1930s. What was the company like? What were the major products? What were some of the major challenges that Queenie and the others explained to you as you began to consider
something? Well, they didn't explain to us. We explained to Well, we knew we had to go into synthetic detergents, and we put an end to that. We knew we had to go into fibers, synthetic fibers, and we were fortunate in that we developed Actolan as a plant and operating at DuPont approaches, because they were being looked at with a little bit of questioning by the test department, antitrust. And they looked around for a company to whom to license under their nylon patents in order to. And they selected us. Now, at that time, we had already joined with with Merck and Visco to form Chemistran Corporation, of which I was the first president. And when that happened, then DuPont wanted us to take a license out in order to free them from this surveillance on the part of the test department, which we did. So that's how we got into nylon. And incidentally, Charlie Thomas and Greenwald, who was the president of DuPont at that time, were good friends. That didn't hurt either.
Good friends from some previous background, or?
At school, I think, at MIT. And also it was through, Charlie had a very good friend, Hank DuPont, Henry DuPont, and that brought him closer to Greenwald, too. Hank DuPont was one of the DuPonts in the company.
One of the problems that faced a lot of chemical companies in the 30s and 40s was linking research to production and really, making the transition from the laboratory to commercial introduction more efficient. And with your labs in Dayton, what kind of arrangements were there to keep in touch with Monsanto's manufacturing end as well? I mean, was that something that you had to work on?
We put the pilot plan in at Dayton. We had the pilot plane on styrene, and we put Monsanto on the styrene. At the time, another reserve was forming up, and Dow was in styrene too. But we beat Dow out and became with this pilot plant, and got a lot of rubber reserve business. But that put us also into styrene plastics, you see, having styrene monomer available. So we got into a plastic and using styrene with other things.
And would the staff at Dayton then, would people come from the manufacturing locations to work on the pilot plant with your staff and then farm it back?
But most of it was done in St. Louis, of course. They had more chemical engineers and more plant men, of course, to operate, and we didn't have that. We could only do it on a smaller scale. We had an acrylonitrile pilot plant in Dayton. We had the pilot plant on fibers and making a Vacaline in Dayton. That's because we initiated it, you see. But on other things and products, general chemicals and so on, they would do that in St. Louis, or at their plants up at Merrimack and Boston.
or the rubber chemicals at nitro.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go into that sort of thing. Does that answer your question?
Oh yeah, I was just trying to get at what you know, the transition from the basic work to.
But if we instituted the process in the laboratory, we usually went through the power plant on it ourselves.
Well, it was Dayton was busy in terms of pilot plants in the early 40s because you had styrene, you had some acrylonitrile work going on. You you were beginning, I think, to start work on the on all the low sudsing detergent, or was that a little bit later?
Yeah, no, all also.
Well, that's an interesting thing. That was a special detergent. But to show how chemistry and that chemical industry can make this a better life, as Kettering did at the start with the motors for women, we did the same damn thing with all. At the time, it was thought that all, that in order to have good detergent, so you get cleansing action on fabric, you needed a large volume of suds. This is TNG talking.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with this product, which we eventually called all, which is ethylene oxide adduct. That was a marvelous detergent and did not foam. No suds at all. Well, one day, and it just happenstance, Westinghouse came to the laboratory. They were early about it somewhere. And they told us about their problem. They wanted to come out with this mechanical clothes washer. Says, we can't do it because the damn suds just flow right out of the machine all over the floor and so on. And it says, our machines are not good. And I said, oh, by God, we got your problem solved already. And I went back on the shelf back in the laboratory and gave him the product. I said, now this one will work. And it was all. But no suds in the damn machine, and that's the reason the mechanical dishwasher went over. Because they came up with a non-subject detergent. And we were responsible for that.
Yeah. Was it hard to get people to accept the fact that a no suds could still get something clean?
Well, you can have detergency tests and determine that without any difficulty very quickly. Yeah.
So there wasn't resistance to it, consumer resistance.
No.
But that's what made Westinghouse, and that's when they came out with a mechanical washer. You know, a hell of a lot of this sounds boastful to me. I hope that that's
not at all. Very impressive career of achievement.
Are you getting hungry?
Well, we should.
Let me see, it's 11:45.
Well,
would you like to go down to the club now and
sure,
just take a little recess?
Yeah.
And we could start up again after lunch.
Can you tolerate a little more after lunch? What's
Yeah, sure.
Make sure this is working again.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay.
Well, okay. I wondered if we might go back for a minute to the pre-Monsanto years. Before we started taping this morning, you were talking about some of the growth of your clientele in the the growth of your clientele in the 20s and 30s, and I just wondered if we could go over a little bit more of that and then go back to to Montana.
Well, where in the hell is my list? Did I find that? Clients, you want the clients? Right?
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
And we discussed this morning the way in which General Motors had provided a subsidy for you for a couple of years, and you were doing work on polymerization of dienes for them, and along with Midgley. The firefighter work that you told us about was one of your early successes, and that was helping.
That's the first one.
And that was...
that's the first invention we had together.
Mm-hmm. And that was... the royalties from that were helping to support the lab as well. And then you began to look for other clients, presumably, or did you? You said some of them just came right to the door after the fortune had... how did the business...
You know, as a matter of fact, I don't know how we acquired companies. But I know we didn't have any trouble getting them.
That's a good position to be in.
You see, Standard of New Jersey, that they came in. We developed from a product made by carbide, which is a byproduct. It's a cracked product. They got from their cracking stills. And we took it and made a resin. There's a lot of unsaturated compounds in it, you see. And we would, with aluminum chloride, polymerize that and made resin, which we called Sanctu resin. And they were at one time interested in it and was going to buy it, but then they lost interest in it. And then Monsanto took it over. It's called Sanctu resin. And that's how Jersey came into the picture. Do you want me to go into this?
Oh, sure.
General Motors, that was synthetic rubber. That was at their request, you see. But we were not successful in that, although we did determine a lot of the elements and chemistry, other things. And as a result of that, now that came later, I was going to say, as a result of that, we went into styrene, but we did not do that until we joined Monsanto.
Okay.
And because we were interested in that, so far as the raw material for synthetic rubber, for rubber reserve, and also for the product per se, to make new types of polymers. I think I went into that this morning. Mm. Me, paper company, the paper company in Chillicothe, Ohio, and we worked on sizing agents and so on for their paper, melamine types and so on.
I'm Arthur Little started off in the same area in chemicals for the paper industry. I'm curious to know whether you stole that away from Little or
I stole it away from him.
No. You did.
No.
No.
I never heard of it.
I'm just curious to know whether that was an area in which you did face competition from Arthur Little Inc.
No, we didn't even know what the hell Arthur D. Little was doing. I saw outside of a lot of testing work, mm-hmm. and just a testing laboratory, which we were not. Alton Weinberg Printing Company, Printing Inc., they were interested. There was an outfit down in Cincinnati, which is now part of a national printing company. It's with a big company. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we were interested in developing new types of carbon papers for them. And also compositions of printing ink.
Mm-hmm.
National Distillers, we was in because of our work on making quick age whiskey.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. That was that sounded like an interesting story. Let me just flip the tape over.
That is